Hello, welcome to episode 8. Is it 8?
It is 8, indeed. 8
of the Extra Sequential podcast coming to you live. Well, not live. That's a lie. Coming to you recorded from Perth.
It
was recorded live. And yes. It's even less live than usual because if you notice any audio differences, we're doing it on Skype this time. We're enjoying the technology that the world has to offer.
And I'm enjoying being separated from my co-host.
Oh, it's good, eh? I don't have to look at you.
No.
You were being sarcastic. Okay, I'm sorry.
I was being sarcastic. You've heard me deeply.
What are we going to be talking about this week, Chris?
Well, first of all, my name is Chris, and you are Maladdin.
We should do that.
We are going to talk about stuff that we've read.
Yeah.
As always, stuff that we've played.
Oh, you are, yeah.
I am. And some interesting news, which we should probably kick things off with, I'd imagine.
And later in the show, we'll be talking about Emmy Town, a new book from Drawn and Quarterly, is it?
From Image, actually.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea. Okay. From Image. And we might mention a book about a shark and a bear that's quite popular at the moment. Who knows?
We just might.
we're full of surprises. How are you going, by the way, Chris?
I am not too bad. I am just sitting here on my bed, and you'll be happy to know that I actually have a Spider-Man 2 bed sheet.
I was hoping you'd say pajama pants or something.
Have Superman pajamas, and they're very comfortable, to wear them during the winter months.
You like to wear them for the ladies when they come over.
No ladies have ever visited me. If I continue wearing my Superman pajamas, I can't.
You're going to have to run to your bedroom and just quickly throw everything out the window and go, "Oh, I don't have sheets. Oh, that's strange." So, oh no, I sleep in the nude. You know, all natural.
I think we should be putting that image in our listeners' minds.
Of course not. Should we get into the news for this week?
The news for the 27th of September.
In news this week, it's been all over the internets. DC, besides moving their head offices, not the comic offices, they're staying in New York, but their head offices are moving to LA as part of their big merger and all that. DC are going to be closing down Wildstorm, which is Jim Lee's imprint. Which is quite sad. So all the Wildstorm licensed characters, and I don't know if Wildstorm do children's comics as well. They don't, do they?
They kind of do.
Okay, they do, yeah.
Well, no, I don't think Wildstorm, I don't think it's under that imprint, they're licensed comics.
Yeah.
Gears of War, that kind of stuff, and the kids' comics they reckon that they will return to DC, Jim Lee said, but it won't be for a while, don't hold your breath.
Well, I've heard that they'll be absorbed by DC because apparently they've said that they're different universes, so they could. And they mentioned it'll be relaunched at a later date, and the editorial team will be folded into the overall DC Comics digital team in Burbank.
Yes.
So that'll be led by Jim Lee and John Rudd.
But yeah, just to clarify, this is what I love. It was mentioned as a bi-coastal realignment strategy, which sounds like some kind of surgery. But yeah, the business, the admin, the multimedia, and the digital content side of things from DC Comics will move to Warner Brothers property in California, like you said, while DC Comics will remain in New York, not that far from the Marvel offices. There will be some layoffs, but there was a rumor that it would be as much as 20%, but it won't be that high at all. And every person at DC has been talked to individually from the human resources.
That's pretty standard. They don't usually send out a mass email to fire everyone.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
I've heard stories.
We've both heard stories.
Probably not in the publishing sector, but yeah, certainly in the construction sector that I work in. But anyway.
Well, I heard they just laid off 80 people. The numbers, some numbers just came out, so 80 so far have been laid off. They're rolling in all these different departments into one to avoid on wastage. I know they're trimming off all the fat, which they're also trimming off the Zooda banner, which is their online publishing leg.
Yeah, they kind of stopped, I think, a couple of months. Oh, they weren't accepting new submissions a couple of months ago.
Yeah, which should have been a heads up, yeah.
And now it's just got Zooda was like an online kind of a competition, wasn't it, where you could if you're a writer or an artist, you could put your stuff up online.
Yep, they do it in batches, and then people would vote, and I think the winner would get published, And they're saying that anything that was being solicited to be published, you know, for the physical print will be published on the DC, but not any new stuff. Okay. So I guess the artists who might have been stressing, oh, I won, but now I get nothing, will still get published. So that's good.
Yes. And, yeah, as you said, Wildstorm is ending in December. So they do stuff like Wildcats, Gen 13, The Authority. And, yeah, Jim Lee started in 1992, like as his imprint when Image started in 1991. And then DC bought it out in 1999. But yeah, Jim Lee did say that some of those characters will return to the DC proper, but yeah, no. And that is a shame because, yeah, like Tom Taylor, the writer that we know, Barry Vaz, he's writing The Authority, he just took over The Authority. Mm-hmm. And people like him and Adam Beechin, who I think was on Wildcats, they hadn't really had any warning to kind of wrap up their storylines. So that's going to be a bit frustrating from their standpoint. Sounds so like hopefully another... they'll get an opportunity. In the future.
Sounds like another cross-gen.
Yeah. But Vertigo is still going, from what I...
DC are going to concentrate on their mainline and Vertigo, as far as I've heard. And I'll also mention that CMX, which was their manga brand, they're shutting down as well. So Zuda and CMX, I think, are shutting down as of this week. Nothing else is coming out. CMX had the problem where they didn't have any... they didn't have, like, a flagship title that they had licensed. They didn't have, like, a Naruto or a Bleach or anything like that. So they were publishing some interesting stuff, but they need, like, a big seller to just support all the other titles, basically, and they didn't have that. Bit of shame. Oh, well. But we'll see what happens, because with time, maybe DC will just publish manga under their own banner, just DC.
Yeah, that's possible. Mm. That's possible. I mean, I think it's a good opportunity for them to make DC known as quite a house of diverse publishing rather than having all these separate imprints.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff has been having DC Comics became DC Entertainment, and then, you know, Paul Levitz, who was one of the higher-ups in the company for a while, stepped down to focus on his writing. And so there's a lot of shuffling going on at DC Comics at the moment. But, yeah, hopefully the good comics will continue.
Yeah, well, I don't think they'll get rid of the comics just yet, because I'd be curious to see how the comics do after movies come out, whether there's a bump in sales, because I've heard it's not too drastic on some films, actually.
No, it's not. You don't get a massive influx of people after watching Spider-Man 3 that all of a sudden go in and buy a lot of Ultimate Spider-Man trades or whatever.
But, well, it used to be that way for, say, when Batman 89 came out, the Tim Burton one.
That's true.
Yeah, like the comic sales just skyrocketed. Apparently,
comics were a lot easier to get back then. I think there are a lot more comic shops around.
Speaking of comic shops and comics being easier to find, I was in Borders the other day.
Oh, yes.
Dreaded Borders. Guess how much they're selling periodical, you know, floppy comics for?
Yeah, like $9 or something ridiculous?
More. $15.
What? 15?
Yep, that's 15 Australian, so that's about 16 US, I think.
Wow, that's ridiculous.
I know, right? I was like, oh, wow. I felt sorry for anyone who went there buying comics. It's just...
If I see people there, I tell them, don't buy comics here. Go to the comic shops up the road.
They're so much cheaper.
But their trades aren't too bad at Borders, and they usually have coupons and stuff.
Their trades aren't bad, but they're always really damaged, the books.
Yeah, they don't have a huge selection. It's been taken over by manga stuff mainly, but...
Well, rumours are going around that Borders might be shutting some of their branches, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they've overbroadened. That's why you see they're clearing out their CD stock. And they might shut down certain parts of the stock because it's just too broad, I think, to maintain a sale. Anyway, should we get more comic news? Let's go into movies, shall we?
Sure.
Do you want to... Okay, we'll mention Christopher Nolan.
Yes.
He's producing the next Superman film.
Yep.
David Goyer has been scripting it, apparently. So,
and those two, we should mention, those two guys worked on Batman Begins and The Dark Knight.
Of course, the wildly popular and successful Dark Knight.
Yes.
And this week, Christopher Nolan's been interviewing potential directors for the film.
Yes.
And we'll just go through the list of them and just talk about whether they'd be good choices or not. So, Tony Scott, Ridley Scott's useless younger brother.
He did make Top Gun.
Oh, did he? Well, that's so long ago. He shouldn't get any free ride for that. But he recently directed the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, which wasn't great. Unstoppable, which I haven't seen. You've got Matt Reeves, who directed recently Let Me In and Cloverfield.
Yes.
Yeah, which it was kind of an interesting choice, I thought. We've got Jonathan Liebesman, who I don't think he's done a whole lot at the moment. He did He's doing Battle for Los Angeles, which I think is coming out early this year. And he's making the Clash of the Titans 2 movie, which I'm not incredibly excited about. Here's one I am very intrigued by, Duncan Jones.
Yeah, that was a surprise. English director, son of David Bowie. He directed Moon, which I believe was his first film.
It was his first film, and it's incredibly impressive for a first film. And he also directed a film called, or he's directing a film called Source Code with Prince of Persia guy, you know.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Jake Gyllenhaal. That's not the film I want to recognize him for. We'll say Jarhead. Jarhead's Jake Gyllenhaal, that's better.
Yeah, yeah.
And the last one on the list is Zack Snyder, which... Yeah, obviously director of 300, Watchmen, and the upcoming Sucker Punch film.
Well, I guess, I mean, he made Watchmen, so he's got some ties with Warner Brothers there, and he kind of proves that he goes, you know, with 300 and Watchmen, he proves that he goes pretty in-depth, and he's pretty an avid comics reader. I mean, Watchmen and 300, regardless what you think of their films, I like both of them. They're close to the source material.
Yeah, that's true.
Obviously, that's going to be harder with any Superman film because Superman's been around for 75 years.
There's not a lot of consistency in the source material over that long period of time, unfortunately.
Unless you make it like an All-Star Superman film. Oh, which reminds me, the All-Star Superman animated film, which is coming out next year, based on the 12 issues by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, the trailer has just been released this week. It looks very different from the Quietly artwork.
See, I heard them like based showing off how they stuck very close to the Quietly artwork and all that. But I kind of suspect they didn't. Maybe.
No, well, all their other animated films have been pretty close to the artwork of that style, like Ann McGuinness in Public Enemies, Michael Turner in the Superman Batman Apocalypse film, which is out soon.
Right.
But yeah, this one doesn't look anything like Quietly's artwork. Mm. Anthony LaPaglia, who's Lex Luthor, James Dengen from Desperate Housewives, they're Superman. They don't even sound like their proper characters in the trailer, but yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. Speaking of animated news, this is an aside, rumours abound. I think they're talking about adapting Batman Year One into an animated film.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah,
which is
Be interesting.
Yeah, could be quite interesting, especially if they try and do the Mazzucchelli style. I quite like.
I think the DC need to get away from Superman and Batman movies, though.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
That'd be like almost four or five in a row. They should. I mean, they've done Green Lantern, Justice League, Wonder Woman, but you know.
The point is, I think they're trying to saturate things a little bit. So
yeah,
basically just trying to. Once you can stock up the DVD shelves at the store with several different Bat titles, you can build a bit of confidence in the line. But back to this list of directors: Tony Scott, Matt Reeves, Jonathan Liebesman, Duncan Jones, and Zack Snyder. Which ones are interesting choices to you? Which would you?
I would like to see Zack Snyder do it, simply because of the reasons I said. You know, he's faithful to the source material. The other guys, I'm not too sure about. I think they've got to prove that they love comics to me. I don't want to see another Bryan Singer reinvention of Superman. Like, it's just pointless.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to reinvent the wheel. Whoever the director is needs to show that they enjoy Superman, they see where he's coming from, and they're not going to put him in a black leotard and make him brooding. They need to respect who Superman is as a character.
Well, depending on which story they're adapting, they could put him in a black costume.
They could, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I definitely don't like Zack Snyder. I'm sorry.
You didn't like Watchmen and 300?
I did not care for 300. I thought it was okay. Very childish. And
even with what's her face in it that you like, Lena Headey?
I do like Lena Headey, but even with Lena Headey, no, that film didn't do anything for me. It just felt a bit too pandering, maybe. I just, that's maybe more of a problem I have with Frank Miller. But Watchmen I thought was a bit, I don't know, too flashy. But it's like, he's definitely has his aesthetic, which is this dark sort of high contrast visuals with just so much slow-mo and ramping. That's what they call when you go really fast and really slow.
Yes.
And that look and Superman fighting that way, I would not want to see.
No, true.
That's the reason why I'm like, ugh. But like, say someone like Matt Reeves, who did Cloverfield, he could do something interesting, I thought.
Yeah, he knows how to kind of handle the spectacle and humanity.
Yeah, see, I think he could do some amazing shots of just the regular people seeing Superman. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I think he has the sort of vision for that. Duncan Jones, I really loved Moon, and I'll be following him very closely. I kind of would just be happy to see Duncan Jones do more original stories of his own, because Moon was a script he wrote himself, and Source Code as well, and he's really into science fiction and... he knows his science fiction. I don't want him to get spoiled, but ruined by having to do this kind of very highly produced film, if you know what I mean.
Yes, yes.
With true. A lot of interference and all this sort of thing. Just leave him alone, let him do his thing. I don't know if you agree, but yeah.
Yeah, you could be right.
Yeah.
Related to superhero films, just very quickly, the Iron Man 2 DVD Blu-ray is out. Well, it's out on the September 28th. Apparently, there's Thor and Captain America film footage locked away as an Easter egg inside the film. And also, the Scott Pilgrim DVD is out, and this is...
it's not out yet.
No, it will be out, sorry, on November 9th.
Liar.
Region 2 and Region 4, which is us in Australia, the UK and New Zealand, we get the full two-disc whole bunch of extras, but Region 1, which is America, only gets a one-disc with no extras.
That's a shame. It's good. We always get whatever features the UK does. That's, our DVDs always match theirs. So
I'm sure the American one will, American viewers will get proper two-disc edition coming out at some point.
Is the Blu-ray two-disc as well?
But we get it first, yes.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah, there's some pretty good docos. There's a lot of documentaries behind the scenes stuff and the animated Scott Pilgrim cartoon. I don't know if you saw that.
In some backstory.
Just a 5-minute thing, but that was quite cool.
It's too late for anyone to see Scott Pilgrim at the movies right now, but definitely hang out for that on Blu-ray or DVD if you haven't seen it, because it's excellent.
Sure is.
Yeah. Other comic book movie news, they are making a Ghost Rider 2.
That's the kind of power that Nicolas Cage wields. Well, that's not all about him, though, really, is it?
No, that's right. I was looking into it. Ghost Rider 1 wasn't a huge success, and it's...
No.
I don't think it's a terrible movie. It's definitely no worse than Fantastic Four.
It's filmed in Melbourne.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is filled with Australian actors.
As you can see, Australian actors, yeah. Mm.
But the rights will be... the reason they're doing it is because if they don't make another movie, if Sony don't make another movie, the rights will revert back to Marvel Disney.
Ah, okay, yes. Yeah.
So
it's the same reason why they're doing Fantastic Four Reborn, which will be the third Fantastic Four film, but not with any of the actors, so not with Jessica Alba, Michael Chiklis, and all those guys. Mm-hmm.
I didn't see any of those films, to be honest. So
the second one was good with Silver Surfer.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that the one with that extended dancing sequence?
What, there's a dancing sequence?
Yeah, Mr. Fantastic, Mr. Stretchy dances, and he doesn't really dance, he just stretches around.
At the wedding?
Is it a wedding? I don't know. And all the girls are like, ooh, he's flexible.
But I think girls sound like that. The reboot.
How would you know, Chris? How would you know?
When it comes to dancing, I know. The names, this might be of interest to you, the names that have been bandied around for the Fantastic Four reboot for Mr. Fantastic are
Adrian Brody? Okay.
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
What?
As Mr. Fantastic.
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers of Tudors and from Paris with Love and Bend It Like Beckham.
Was he in Bend It Like Beckham?
Yeah, he was the coach, the Scottish coach.
Okay.
The one that girls fall in love with.
Fox wants Stephen Moyer as Dr. Doom. Is he the guy from True Blood?
Stephen Moyer? I'm not too sure. I can look it up.
That's the guy from... I think that's the guy from True Blood, the English actor. Yes, it is.
Okay.
True Blood as Vampire Bill Compton.
Oh, he's Bill Compton. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sookie. I can't have this.
So, yeah. I have no idea when that Fantastic Four reboot will come out, but yeah.
I will not be waiting with anticipation.
Your breath will not be bated.
No. Let's get into what we've been reading this week, Chris. What have you been reading?
Yes. Well, I've been playing something as well.
That's not what I asked. Jeez. You do anything I tell...
You never listen. Been playing Halo Reach, which is the Xbox exclusive game through Microsoft. So this is actually the last Halo game by developer Bungie before they go off and create their own stuff, and then Microsoft takes over the Halo franchise themselves. So it's a sci-fi shooter, shooting aliens and all that kind of stuff. And it's a prequel to all the first Halo games that have been around since, I think, 2000. So there's some new weapons, you can customize your character, which is cool. Right at the start, you can change the helmet, the color, put all markings and all that kind of stuff. And then how your character looks is reflected throughout the game and the cutscenes. And there's a lot of cutscenes in this game. I was actually quite surprised. They appear quite often.
Have you finished the game yet?
I haven't. I don't know how far in I am to it, but I just this very morn, I say unto you, I finished a rather difficult level, so I was quite...
You got it extra early, and you played Halo Reach.
Well, it's a long weekend here in Australia, as record this. Woo. So, you know, this is the time to be lazy.
Yeah, I could say go to the beach or something, but I'm not an outdoorsy guy. I like comics. No.
Then there is actually a Halo comic out at the moment. It's a 4-issue miniseries written by Brian Reed, who knows a thing or two about writing comics and video games, with art by Felix Ruiz, called The Fall of Reach, and it's about the boot camp.
It ties in with this game, does it?
The Spartan soldiers and stuff, because you play as a Spartan. Yeah, yeah. You've been playing a comic book video game recently.
Oh, yeah, I tried Scott Pilgrim, that game.
Yes.
We got like 3/4 of the way through. We were playing with 4 friends co-op in the same... It was having some fun, and then the game crashed. In the same spot it's been crashing for everyone else, so then we played Castle Crashers instead and probably had a little bit more fun. So the game's okay. It's a bit repetitive after a while, I find. Yeah. There's an okay variety in the boss battles, but it's just... it gets kind of tedious. They didn't put too much effort into giving you a lot of different things to do. There weren't enough little mini games or anything, so.
Weren't all the side scrolling games like Ninja Turtles and Simpsons back in the day, they were all pretty much repetitive, weren't they?
They were repetitive, but I guess we require a bit more of our games these days.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? compare this to, did you ever play the Simpsons arcade game back in the day?
Yeah, I did, yes.
That's never been released on any console, I don't think. Or maybe on like the Super Nintendo, but it wasn't a good port. And that has a lot of variety in it in terms of enemies, the way the levels work and appear, and lots of mini games, which aren't always a lot of fun. They just involve tapping, you know, buttons. But more.
Could you play as Maggie?
No, you were trying to rescue Maggie. I think like Smithers and Mr. Burns kidnapped her. And it was kind of a pretty flimsy reason to kidnap her. It was great because Marge has like her special weapons, a vacuum cleaner. They could not think of anything interesting for Marge. But yeah, so I've been playing the Scott Pilgrim game. Speaking of Halo, did you ever read that the Halo graphic novel?
No, that came out, I think, 2-3 years ago now.
It was 2006 is the date I have here.
Wow, okay.
From Marvel Comics.
Yep.
And some of the artists involved, Simon Bisley, who I really like. You've seen his work on 2000 AD, probably. Mobius, so Jean Giraud, who I'm a huge fan of. And a bunch of other dudes who I can't seem to find the names of here, but I never read it, so yeah. Did you?
Yeah, I think Brian Michael Bendis wrote a couple of stories. It's basically like a little bunch of short stories, and I think it was published by Marvel.
It says Marvel here, so yeah, definitely.
Yeah, cool.
It says Bungie on the bottom.
Yeah, cool. They're the developer.
Oh, okay, right. Sorry. I wouldn't know that because...
Of the game.
You did say that before. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You never listened.
Oh, the tables have turned. What have you been reading as an actual comic this week?
It's a pretty big week for Marvel this week, but what I have been reading is Thor, number 615, Thor, the Norse god of thunder, the golden-haired Avenger, the guy with the wings on his helmet and the red cape and the mighty hammer, whichever you want to call him.
Asterix.
Yeah, very similar. That might be related. So Thor 615, which is the first issue by the new creative team, which is by Matt Fraction, who's writing the Invincible Iron Man and Casanova, which was his big break, and art by Pasquale Ferri. And I loved Ferri's artwork because he used to do Superman probably about 8, 9, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he's got a very kind of almost cartoony style. But, yeah, he does action scenes pretty awesome, and he really always puts a lot of emotion on his page. So this is the first issue by the new creative team, and it's good because the first page actually has an introduction about how Asgard came to Earth, and then it fell because Norman Osborn and his team of Dark Avengers invaded it. So now kind of Asgard is in ruins. So it kind of sets you up. So this is actually a good place to start if you haven't been following the Thor title regularly, such as myself. I haven't. Then this has made a lot of sense, and it begins with a scientist in a cafe in Oklahoma, and he's talking to someone who isn't revealed until the end, so I won't spoil it for you, talking about basically old alternate universes. And he has this theory that since Asgard, which is like, you know, the Norwegian whatever myth coming to Earth, and that shouldn't have happened, so now the cosmic balance is upset, so now there's going to be another force that's going to have to replace Asgard. So he's basically setting that up. And then you see some red-skinned aliens who basically seem to support this guy's theory. He's moving their way through different universes, raping and pillaging. Well, maybe just pillaging or killing. Now the Asgard is gone. So, yeah, it's pretty good. It's a good combination of sci-fi and fantasy, which right, I think okay. Thor doesn't go into that territory enough. Like the last few issues before this have been, you know, almost Lord of the Rings, epic fantasy and... or that Shakespearean talk. There's not a lot of that here, apart from the Asgardians. But yeah, it's actually really enjoyable, wonderful art, and he sets up a lot of interesting stories and possible threats for the future. So, and what I didn't realise was Donald Blake, who, going back to the origin of Thor when Stan Lee created him back in the 60s, was the, like, lame doctor who transformed himself into Thor, but now here... he's like a disembodied spirit who's talking to Thor, kind of like Firestorm. I don't know if you know the Firestorm character from DC. He's the guy with the head on fire. Kind of Ghostwriter. He's like two people in one. And so here we have Donald Blake. So Thor's flying through the sky, and Donald Blake is like this spirit, and they're talking to each other and not getting along. So I've never seen that before. So that's obviously something that's happened in Thor that I'm not aware of. But yeah, it's actually quite a... Matt Fraction is a very good writer. So if you like the Invincible Iron Man, which he writes, then this is the way to go for you.
Okay. Would it be enough to convert me to read it if I didn't have any interest?
It's not very superhero-y. Like, there's not a lot of bad guys who want to take over the universe kind of thing. It's still got a more of a rich fantasy setting. Like, there's a scene in here where there's, like, just 3 or 4 pages of these blue-skinned elves who are talking about love and life and snowflakes dripping on their tongue before they all get killed. But as I said before, kind of the mythology around Thor melding in with the Marvel Universe is quite an interesting mix, because he's like old school, you know, Viking type warriors and stuff. So that mixing in with the modern Marvel Universe is quite an eclectic mix. So the possibilities story wise are quite endless. So you may very well enjoy it.
Okay. All right. This week I've been reading something very different. I'll start with it's a French comic I've been reading called Peter Pan. It's basically a prequel to the Peter Pan story by Régis Loisel. So, like, Régis Loisel.
Yes.
French writer born, I think, in the 1950s, and he's, I think, very popular, but not a lot of his stuff's been translated into English, which is a bit of a shame. Okay. I've been reading a Croatian copy. So, because, with European comics, you kind of just have to find another language, otherwise you'll never find anything, basically. It's been really interesting so far. It's quite, with European comics, you always see this, sometimes you see this blend of very lighthearted stuff and then very dark things. Like, in the first volume, he basically is kind of like a Dickensian street urchin, and, He has to buy some alcohol for his mum, but he doesn't give him any money. So, the way he gets the money is quite, like, disturbing. And then this guy wants to rape him. And it's not your lighthearted normal Peter Pan story.
Okay.
But, I've really enjoyed it so far. This was written in 92, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. That's a prequel, did you say?
Yeah, it functions as a prequel to... well, the main story. The tone's quite different, and his name's just Peter. And in the story, you know, Pan, the Shakespearean
form
from Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes.
He's one of the characters, so I'm guessing that'll tie into why he's called Peter Pan. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming Pan will die, but I'm not that far in. I'm about 2 volumes in, and I think there's 6. I've looked into it. Heavy Metal Publishing.
Oh, yes.
Have put out 2 volumes of this in English.
Yeah, okay.
The art style is it's kind of intentionally ugly. I don't know how I would describe
it. I actually find it quite beautiful.
Well, yeah, it is quite beautiful, and then the characters all have
Characters are ugly.
Yeah, in their face they're all ugly. They're like it's quite interesting. The way he draws Tinkerbell is so different to any other Tinkerbell I've ever seen. She's very plump and, like, big-hipped.
She's got yellow and orange stockings on and, like
a wasp.
Fly yeah. wings.
Yeah, it makes her look like a wasp. Yeah. She's, like, very plump and kind of, yeah. Of course, Tinkerbell never talks. And Peter Pan's got these, like, big teeth and he's just an ugly-looking redhead kid, basically.
Kind of Charles Dickens-y kind of characters. Yeah.
But yeah. I think he really nails the character because I think there's sometimes a trend to make Peter Pan a bit more nice. And I remember in the book he's a bit more mischievous and he's gets very jealous and stuff. So at the beginning he's a pirate, like he joins up with Hook and them.
Okay.
Just because it's fun and he wants to kill things. And,
yeah.
And then he'll bring his friends over and I guess they'll become the Lost Boys. It's been really good. So if you want to check out your European comics, I think that's a good one. I'm trying to describe the art style like this, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of reminds, it's quite light in colouring-wise.
Well, yeah, there's
different scenes. It almost reminds me of kind of Sketchy and Joe Kubert, who did like Hawkman in the kind of 40s and 50s. It kind of reminds me of that kind of style, but a bit more fine and detailed than that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is a very European, isn't it? It's not...
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Overly muscular men and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, like absolutely.
American superheroes.
I've been admiring the his panel arrangements. Okay. I mean, it might not be clear from some of the preview images I sent you, but when you actually sit down and look at what he's doing in every page and the panel, it's very formal. So, like, he'll be careful that the top row will only show, like, certain types of shots, and then the middle row will show a certain other types of shot, like the camera will be lifted up, you know. So okay. It's very it's easy on the eyes to read. And, I've learned so much about layouts just reading this. Eh? It's, the way he combines long shots with close-ups, and he never mixes the two next to each other in a disturbing way. And if he does, he'll change the panel arrangement, so your eye follows it a bit better. And the colouring's great. The actual scenes in Neverland are very brightly coloured, like you said. And then the scenes in London, which is where the character's apparently from in this version, are very darkly coloured. Blues, washed out greys. So the colourist is capable of a lot, and then he just ramps it up to this super colourful style in the Neverland scenes. It's really good. I'd recommend checking it out, especially if you can find all the volumes, because I don't know how much longer Heavy Metal are going to publish this stuff.
Well, apparently there's 6 volumes in total.
Yeah, that's what I... Yeah. That's what I said.
And I wasn't listening to you, was I? No. And it looks like there's been an animated pilot.
Really?
I'm just looking at a French website as we speak.
Wow.
But, that's all I can discover at that. Thank you, Google.
I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Look into that, Maladdin.
They'll probably cut out the disturbing stuff, though, that's for sure.
Yeah,
because
the French don't mind disturbing stuff.
Well, no, it's I guess it's not so much for kids. Maybe it's I guess for teens and above. There's a fair bit of nudity in it, so if you're sensitive about that sort of thing, skip it. Like the mermaids. Do you remember the mermaids?
Not really.
Oh well, okay. Well, if you remember Peter Pan, there's mermaids, and they're always kind of vicious, and you know, like how mermaids drag sailors down to sea to die.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what they're like.
Okay.
They're not that cheerful things, so it's a pretty cool comic. So yeah, what else have you been reading this week?
I have also been reading a comic also by Image called Skull Kickers. It's kind of had a lot of press the last month really. It seems to be quite a sleeper hit. Even before it came out, copies were selling on eBay for like anywhere between $8 and $20, which are like, you know, 2 or 3 times its cover price. So like Chew and Morning Glories, also fairly new comics from Image that have been receiving a lot of internet buzz. It almost seems like we're in the middle of the 1990s boom at the moment. People are getting excited about comics that haven't even come out yet. So this one, the story is by Jim Zupkovich, art is by Chris Stevens and Edwin Hong. So there's 2 pencillers. It's hard to find, apparently, in a lot of shops because they've sold out. But, I mean, yeah, I've read it, and it's not as great as perhaps the buzz would seem to indicate. But it's not bad. It's basically, it centres on this angry, loudmouth dwarf-type character, kind of like Gimli from Lord of the Rings, and this big hulking man who are like basically two mercenaries who travel the countryside in this kind of rich fantasy setting like Dungeons and Dragons or something like that, dispatching werewolves and zombies and creatures. The local cops don't really seem to like them because they're more successful at protecting the villagers from werewolves and stuff than they are. It's bloody, but not too much. There's a bit of profanity, I guess, but not too much. But they kind of speak in modern settings, even though it's like set in this Lord of the Rings fantasy world. I mean, they're not talking about iPhones or anything, but you know, it's got kind of that witty modern style. It's quite a light and breezy read, as is the art. And even though it's got two artists, I couldn't even recognise where one stopped and the other began, like they do half the pages each. But yeah, so that kind of seamless transition is always a good style, because whenever you see two artists, it can be quite jarring.
I know what you mean.
So yeah, there's not a huge setup of this world. You don't even know the names of the characters. The two main characters, they aren't even given names. But yeah, things happen pretty quickly. There's a lot of, it opens with these guys killing werewolves in an alley. And then this Chancellor guy gets assassinated, and then they had the dwarf and the human have to try and find who the killer is. It kind of reminded me of, like, Lethal Weapon via Lord of the Rings. It's,
that's interesting. Which is the crazy suicidal one?
That would be the dwarf.
Wow, okay. And which so is the by-the-book family man?
That would be the human.
Oh, you're kidding.
So the characters, I mean, they're not exactly like this, but it seems to have the over-the-top, action-packed, an excuse for an action scene kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's funny enough, but not hilarious. But yeah, enjoyable. I mean, like Thor, I guess I'm curious to see where it goes. Apparently this story did have two short stories in the Image's Pop Gun anthologies. I think Image have done like two or three Pop Gun.
Yeah, Pop Gun's all right, actually. It's
been and there were a couple of Skull Kickers stories in that. So yeah, as I said, there's a lot of buzz in this. So if you can find Skull Kickers number one anywhere in a shop near you, it is worth picking up. But I just don't know if it's going to live up to the hype that has been given it. Nevertheless, you know, we comic fans will move on to something else relatively quickly, I'm sure.
Yeah, comic fans are a bit fickle that way. I find, I don't know how Image does, but it seems like they're always launching new titles.
They do a lot. I mean, Image, and we'll talk about one of their books later, but because they do such a diverse stuff, like even if you never read anything from Marvel or DC or Dark Horse and you only read Image stuff, like, you know, Walking Dead or Invincible or Spawn, I mean, there's something for everybody.
Yeah, well, those are like their flagship titles now, I guess. But
yes.
But it seems like whenever I look at new arrivals from Image, it tends to be issue ones or issue twos, and then how long they last.
They do a lot of miniseries. They have very, very, very few ongoing series.
Oh, that's all right then. Yeah,
I think it's just those three that I mentioned, probably. But yeah, they do a lot of miniseries. Which are then collected in trades, obviously.
Well, that's fair enough, actually, then, because it beats watching sales drop until the title just dies a slow death. I know Image are one of few publishers who still offer, you know, creator rights, and they still allow open solicitations.
I think.
So it's quite unique to see, and I'd class them as a semi-major publisher now, at least.
Yeah, I think they're in the top five. Yeah,
definitely. With Dark Horse and, I guess, who else would be left?
Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, and I think maybe Viz? Dynamite. I think it's
Are we excluding manga or
IDW? I think
IDW.
Okay,
fair enough. What I've been? Can I go into?
Please do. Yeah, I'm finished. That's all you now, buddy.
Excellent. I had to hunt around a fair bit for this, but I finally found a volume of Gon, G-O-N.
Yes.
The little dinosaur with a heart of coal.
Heart of coal.
Yeah, he's.
Did you make that up?
Yes, yes. That
blurb on the cover.
No, I made that up. He's incredibly. It's great. It's as funny as I hoped it would be. I mentioned it last week as part of our Wordless Comics. It's a manga by Masashi Tanaka. Basically about this little dinosaur which just antagonizes other animals and acts like a jerk because he's just like a douche. Basically, it's great. The first story, I could only find volume 7, and that's the last volume, but it doesn't matter. It was $10 for a new volume. Wow. And that's probably because it's wordless, so I don't have to pay any translators. So it's the covers don't look good, and then on the opening side, it's really detailed. And the first story in it is he raises a baby chick albatross, basically just to one-up the other bird in the nest next to him. And he treats it like crap. Like there's this great scene where like the mother bird is like sort of cleaning her chicks, you know, with her beak. So he picks up the chick in his mouth and just shakes it around like a dog would, you know, like a bone or something, and okay. Spits it out. And like kicks it and like bites it and tries to get it to man up. He basically teaches it to be a man. just like him kind of thing. So he turns this albatross into a total badass by the end of the issue. And then he goes into this training with this enormous orangutan who he has all these challenges that he has to perform, like superhuman feats of agility. And it's this tiny little dinosaur, like the size of a dog, and this huge orangutan. And the last story is it's him and all these other animals, and they're trying to steal this honey from this bee's nest. Yep. And there's these great series of panels where they're just all coated in bees. Like, you know, you know those guys you see who make beards made of bees?
Oh, yes.
That's what it looks like. Just these panels. So you just see, like, the silhouette of him, and he's drawn just made up of bees, and then more bees come, and more bees, until they all finally erupt in, like, spots from, you know, stings. It's actually really, really funny. I'd lend it to you because I think you'd get a... You'd cool. dig it. Yeah. It's something I'd lend to my dad as well. I think he'd love this.
And it's not difficult to follow despite the lack of text?
It's really quite easy to follow. I found maybe the first story with the seagulls was a bit harder to follow just because I couldn't tell the birds apart as easily. But yeah. The later stories, because he uses lots of animals, are really, you know, really easy to follow. And the main character is really easy to spot on the page because he's always frowning and he never looks happy unless if he's sleeping, basically.
Okay.
And drawing. Yeah, but this was coming out through CMX. So okay. I don't think I'll be having any luck finding reprints.
I thought Dark Horse might have taken that. Maybe they have. But, I'm sure some researching will turn up where it is found on the page.
Yeah, I think if you want to find it, maybe now, because when I looked around in stores the other day, I could only find volume 7. So,
okay,
I don't know why, but it's a great little comic.
Cool.
Yeah. Was that all we had?
That's all we got, baby.
Let's talk about a new Image comic that's came out.
No, it's not that new.
Well, it came out a couple of months ago, but it's a new title.
Yep.
Yeah, called Sea Bear and Grizzly Shark. And the subline of the title is, "They got mixed up!" Exclamation point. it's by Ryan Ottley and Jason Howard. They basically kind of take turns. So one of them just writes and illustrates the... I should explain it first.
I think Robert Kirkman wrote both stories, but it was two different artists, if memory serves me correctly.
Oh, wow. Okay. No. It says written and drawn by them, but I think... the introduction's by Robert Kirkman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But what happens, basically, in the story is the flimsiest of setups, basically the continents and the oceans switch places. So now the oceans are land, you know, are land masses and the ocean is land. So the other way around. And everyone swapped except for one grizzly bear and one shark who stayed. The shark stayed on the land and the grizzly bear stayed in the ocean. And the book basically has the artist taking turns telling the story. There's this shark attacking these hunters in the forest, and there's this bear. The bear one's insane. It has like robots and ninjas and things. And the shark one, I actually enjoyed the shark story more. Do you remember
the shark one? This is a black and white book, and it's a one shot, so it's not part of a series. But I think the shark one is that the one where he like leaps out of the bushes and he chops the guy's head in half.
Yeah, like he bites the sun in half, and then
the sun won't die or something.
Yeah, the sun won't die. Yeah. I suspect it's not just going to be a one shot. It is numbered one, and at the end of the bear story, it sets it up like. There is like a bit of, not a cliffhanger, but like there's this other bear watching after he kills the other bear. So it's like, oh, this story will be continued.
Okay.
And there's their whole plot there with some sort of agency or something. So I don't know. But yeah, what did you think of it?
I liked it. It was kind of, and I think apart from Kirkman's introduction, who I hear like wrote the origin, didn't he, by memory?
I would say so, yeah.
But there's an afterword by the guys, and they were saying, I think they came up with the idea, like, just they kept laughing how absurd the idea was, and they said, we should do this during our downtime. So that's because I think between them, they wrote, one draws the Invincible, one draws the Amazing Wolfman.
Oh, that's right.
For Image.
That's right. Jason Howard draws Wolfman, and Ryan Ottley draws Invincible.
And they were just, like, so amused at their idea. And it kind of seems like the idea, like, you'd have when you were 12 and you'd stay out at your mate's house overnight for the first time and you'd just be talking about stupid ideas. It kind of seems like that. But It doesn't take itself seriously at all. Like, it's just such a fun book and so over the top. I think if you're looking forward to the Piranhas 3D movie, this is a book for you.
Oh, that Piranhas movie looks insane. I wasn't too keen, and then I looked up some of the stuff that happens in it. Like, I was listening to some film review podcast talk about it. And
the Piranhas film?
Yes, the Piranha 3D. Yep. Like, there's... I'll say it, and you'll tell me if it's radio appropriate, but a piranha bites a dude's dick off and then spits it at the camera in 3D.
Wow.
And there's various boob biting, and it looks like they've gone, how crazy can we make this? And that's what you want from that kind of thing.
And this book from Image seems the same kind of thing.
I would say
so. It was quite successful when it came out, Chew and Skull Kickers, there was a lot of buzz when it first came out, and it's a book that's hard to get a hold of. Mm-hmm. It's just enjoyable. It doesn't take itself seriously. Tongue firmly planted in cheek. If you like kind of Monty Python-y kind of humour, it's kind of like when that's... Because I think the shark one, the father and the son are in the forest, and then the son keeps getting attacked or mauled, and his kids are hanging out.
Yeah, the son gets, bit in half, so, his legs are chopped off, and the father's like, go, move it, son, move it, and he's like, oh, it hurts, and then he's, I need to cauterize the wound, so he drops his son in, a burning fire, just to cauterize his bottom half, and he keeps making jokes, the son's like, dad, I gotta pee, and the dad's like, what the, how, and then the kid's like, ha, 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 and they all have a good laugh, so it's pretty silly that way, yeah. And whenever anyone gets a slight drop, injures himself slightly, the shark, jumps out, the smell of blood.
Oh, I guess.
Yeah. This is family camping, and then the mum's like, I bit my tongue, and then the shark kills the whole family, and there's some jokes which are less appropriate. That one I thought had the right tone. The bear one I didn't like as much. I thought maybe it was trying too hard with the robots and alien species and stuff.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's right. There was half human, half bear hybrids, and he had robot arms, and I thought that's maybe too much. I don't know.
Yeah.
Too much. Too much, Chris.
Yeah. You've got limits.
Yeah. But Image seems to do a few of these kind of comics, which are kind of okay, let's just get this wild thing out there because this is the sort of impulse purchase that people really like.
Yeah, especially something like Sea Bear, Grizzly Shark. It's black and white, it's cheap to make. They probably didn't do a huge print run for it, which, again, I guess helps add to its popularity and collector value kind of buzz. So, yeah, good on them for putting stuff like this out.
That's right.
Nobody else will.
Well, yeah, I guess they won a few publishers who have embraced the ultra-violence thing. I mean, yeah, that's not really fair because DC has people's brains being blown out and stuff.
Yeah, not in the DC proper story, but in
Blue Beetle
Wild Storm RIP.
No, Blue Beetle got his brains blown out.
Yeah, that's true, but you don't actually see. It was all in silhouette, and you just see blood.
You see his skull kind of explode in silhouette, so I would say that's pretty graphic.
But you can get away with a lot of
silhouette. I'm not arguing this with you. No, you can get away. No, you can get away with more in silhouette. I just think it's kind of cheap. But no, there's not the sense of humour that you find in Image, for example.
Yeah, that's true.
About the violence. But I'm not the kind of person who watches horror films to get a good laugh. So, but I thought this was funny because it was more cartoony.
Yeah.
And it was set up more like a joke. And at no point in the shark one was anyone even remotely acting like a normal human being.
No, that's true.
So that was kind of funny. It's when people are like, oh, God, help me. It's like, then I'm like, oh, it's not funny anymore for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Sam Raimi's kind of early films, like Evil Dead and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, when they start acting silly and stuff, it's like, okay, cool. I can be happy if they die because they're cartoon characters, just...
Yeah, true. It's a good way of putting it.
But if you can find a copy, check it out. It's a good little buy. You don't have to buy any more issues. It could be done in one, or they could make more. And I think any of the issues of this would just stand alone anyway. So
yeah,
it'll be a successful little title for Image, I think. I'd say so, yeah. Should we talk about the other comic we've both read this week?
Also from Image, yes, is a trade paperback called Emmy Town, EMI Town, and it's basically it's a sketch diary by writer artist Emmy Lennox, who is a young Japanese lady,
Japanese American, yep,
I think she's Japanese from what I read.
I'm saying Japanese American because she's living in either the US or Canada or something.
So this is her, basically it's a page a day, and it's her. It's a collection of her blog, her visual sketch diary, which is put up on her website, published from May 2009 to the end of April 2010. And it's basically, if you like, I liked it, and I think I liked it more than you. And if you're not sure if you like this book, you can go to her website, which is emmytown.blogspot.com, which is where this project started. It's 400 pages. It's for $20. It's released on the 27th of October. It's got a pretty funny introduction by writer Jamie S. Rich, who's done a few stuff like Spell Checkers, probably the most recent run. And it's got an awesome guest page by artist Brandon Graham, who did a series called King City, I believe. So it's a pretty breezy read, and it's basically just each day, each page is a summary of that day's events, pretty much. So
very brief summary, I'd say.
So she's interning at Top Shelf, and then she's like, you know, building a bunny cage. She's going to parties. She's wondering about what she should buy. She's eating breakfast burritos. She seems to get accosted a lot by strange homeless people.
Yeah, there's illustrated grocery lists. Like, she'll list her iPod songs and kind of reenact people she meets. And it's very off the cuff. So it's kind of like, it is, yeah, it feels like a blog, but it's not like a continuous story. It's like, it's not coherent in that way. So I noticed, I'd be hesitant almost to call it a comic because, I don't think in any sense does she do any two panels that follow on sequentially from each other. Like maybe a couple of times, but it's more kind of, if she's recounting a story, all that story will happen in one panel and she'll say what happened. So, but overall, like, this sort of diary comic will appeal to some people, and I'd say it'd be more fun in a zine format. It was almost too much in this many pages. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I liked how James Kochelka, he does a book called American Elf, which is kind of similar to this. So if you liked that, I think you'll like this. This is kind of a bit more cutie and a bit more random and stuff. And there's not necessarily talking animals and stuff, but I think it's 400 pages, so it doesn't necessarily have to be read in one sitting. Like you said, there's not a continual epic narrative being told here.
No.
Nevertheless, there are things like when she's preparing for a wedding, she's thinking about what to buy, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's things that seem to transition over the days and months and pages.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like looking for a new job, or she's like things that recur, like her dog Henry, her love of bunnies. She's got these characters called Ocean Girl and Octozoid who are kind of appear every now and then. And it's done in a very manga style, I'd say.
Would you say? I thought it was definitely more cartoonish, like more kind of
Saturday morning cartoon. The Teen Titans cartoon. Not overly manga, but it's got, like, you know, expression, big heads and lots of open mouths and that kind of stuff. Everything, the expressions are generally over the top, but every now and then she'll do something which is even quite distanced from that style.
She'll play around with other styles.
Quite beautiful and quite attractive, and I can see her getting work in that style, which is more of an indie, almost like a Faith Erin Hicks, who did Brain Camp and something else. Welcome to Ellesmere, I think she did. It's almost that kind of style, which is, kind of a cross between cartooning and manga. But, it's black and white, but with a duotone, so it's black, white, and blue, I guess.
I'd say as a comment, just in terms of the type of story she's telling about herself, I guess the examples people look to, I guess, are Harvey Pekar, who sort of tells these kind of little vignettes of stuff that happens to him.
Yep.
And the other one that occurred to me, just because she mentions him in the book, is Craig Thompson.
I was going to mention that scene where
she's gushing about him and all this. And he's Carnet de Voyage.
From 2004, definitely.
Which was more of a loose autobiographic.
Journal.
Yeah, like a journal. And I thought that's more of a narrative tale. Like, I thought he put a bit of effort into trying to make it make sense. But he would just have random stuff happening on panels as well. And I think, I'm sure she's read it because she's a fan of his. So that's an interesting book from 2004. But I sort of felt she didn't let us into her world a lot. Like, it was very, it was little things that happens to her and cute things. Or, I don't know, like, I guess cute there was a lot of trying to be cute kind of thing, which will appeal to a lot of people for sure. But I never felt at any point was she letting us into something deep inside her or like really telling us what she's really thinking. Like there was never really anything about some emotional personal moment, which you would see in Craig Thompson's work or even sometimes Harvey Pekar's, like, you know, he would be occasionally standoffish, but he was always honest and he'd let you into what he's thinking. Because I thought she was maybe a little bit more closed, so I didn't get the feeling it was like a diary in that sense. It was more, it was like a blog of funny stuff that happened to me today.
That is true, and I think she does talk about that in the introduction. Like, she's kind of surprised that she has this opportunity to put her almost a personal blog, even though it's on the internet. I guess it can't be that personal, but, but herself open up to the world in this published format. So she kind of wasn't ready for that. So if there's more volumes on the way, like another one next year or the year after perhaps, then she might kind of look at herself more. But yeah, I did get that feeling that you know, she's talking about typical things like struggling with money and shopping and
that a little kind bit of stuff. A barrier from like what she does to who she is, like I couldn't get a good sense of what kind of person she is, more so just the stuff that happens to her, that's all.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I mean, and this There seems to be like a broken heart kind of, you know, like a lost love or something going through there very subtly. Like she
yeah, but she doesn't go into it.
No, she doesn't mention names or anything.
Well, it doesn't have to be names. I just thought like she does mention that she's upset or occasionally she's depressed or something, but you never get a sense of why or what's behind it or any relationship stuff. But I was thinking of the work of Jeffrey Brown. Do you know Jeffrey Brown?
Yes, who does a lot of top shelf stuff. Yes,
another top shelf artist who, again, like autobiographical stuff.
Yeah.
And he's I guess he has a normal life like Emmy's as well.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not a huge fan of Jeffrey Brown, to be honest. I think, But he's sort of the same way. He doesn't do a whole lot with himself, so the stories are more very, very slice of life of a normal person, but he kind of lets you in a little bit more into his emotional state.
Yes.
Where she didn't add as much.
Like, no.
I think her book will appeal to, I know a lot of people who really dig, like the style for one is very kind of cute cartoon.
Yes.
So it'll appeal to, I know exactly the type of person it'll appeal to, but I can't describe it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was actually funnier than I thought it would be. Like, I've just selected a random one here, which is from the 22nd of the 5th, 2009 entry. And it's just a one-page panel, and the caption is, "Had a beer with Ben. It was nice, but he always gives me reason to worry." And the picture is just the two of them on opposite sides of the table, not talking, and she's got a worried look on her face, and the person she's talking to, Ben, is just a speech bubble coming out of his mouth, and the picture inside that bubble is a picture of a knife and two pills.
Oh, yeah. That one,
she's just got this worried face and a look. And so, like every, you know, dozen or so pages, I'll laugh more than I thought.
Yeah, there was a scene with, like, she keeps having altercations with homeless people.
Yes.
And there's one where she's walking her dog, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, and the guy's singing, and she makes some joke, like, because she thinks he's just making stuff up, and he's like, "I was singing in Bulgarian," and then she has a huge argument with him. And that sort of stuff's funny. But yeah, I guess if... No, I won't say what I was going to say. No,
please do.
No, I was just thinking, I'm trying to describe the type of person it would appeal to. I know a lot of people that say who are into very girlish anime.
Yes.
Yep, I think that'll appeal. Yeah. If you own a pair of cat ears, for example, if you're that kind of person, you're like, Emmy's not like that at all, but no, you're into that kind of cute stuff and cute cartoons, I think you'll like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. I mean, there is, and there's like cats do appear in this book, like army cats. But I am impressed by the amount of information and daily happening she manages to cram in on one page. Like, she leads a lot more of an interesting life than I do.
You think so?
Well, she's got a lot of friends. She's going to parties and just... It's interesting. I mean, after I read it, I was thinking it's a lot of stuff, like a lot of internal monologues and a lot of... And we all do this. We all have, you know, just odd thoughts that we just think to ourselves and don't say it out aloud. And I wouldn't be surprised if after reading this, a lot of people go, hey, I could just do this. I have crazy, weird, random thoughts as well. I'm going to start a blog and become a published author. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy. But I think...
Working at Top Shelf definitely gave her a leg up.
But they didn't publish this, which I don't know why.
No, but they helped her with connections, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, they've already got a lot of books, you know, like we said, American Elf and stuff out there like this already, perhaps.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But I mean, yeah, all the Top Shelf references are still kept in here, so you know, kudos to Image for keeping those in. But yeah, I mean, it's an easy read. It's something you can just leave in your coffee table and just pick up and read every now and then. It's, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to give yourself a whole afternoon to finish it. But
final verdict.
I liked it. It's 400 pages for $20, so American. So, I mean, it's relatively cheap. And, yeah, like I said, it's for fans of, like, American Elf and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's not laugh-out-loud funny, but I found it kind of... I wouldn't go so far as to say it's irresistible, mm-hmm. but I was mildly enchanted by it, shall we say.
Yeah. I think in small doses would be fun. I'd be interested in checking out her blog. I just was slightly skeptical of the larger format. And I think if you like that kind of cute little vignettes of stuff that happens to people during the day, this would definitely appeal to you.
Agreed. Lastly, website of the week this week is Kickstarter.com, which some people, well, quite a lot of people would be familiar with. I actually just made a couple of guys at work aware of this website. And then I got an email from one of the girls that sits next to them saying, what have you started, Chris? Because they kept looking at it. Kickstarter is what you call, I think they call it crowdfunding. Is that what it's called? Something like that. Where basically it's a website. It started in 2009, where if you have an idea, like you want to make an art installation or a short film or a website, or you want to make a comic or, you know, make T-shirts or music or whatever, anything kind of arty related.
Yes.
But you don't have the funds for it. Basically, Kickstarter allows you the opportunity to create a project and say, hey, guys, this is what I want to do. I need this much money.
Yep.
If I get this, then we'll make it and we can all bear the fruits of coming to see this project come to pass.
This is what each donator gets. This is, and they will set out an exact price that they're after, and you can donate as little or as much as you want. Sometimes they'll say, you know, $5 from each person would help for this. And I noticed there was a huge range of arty stuff, so there wasn't just... it was fashion, it was performance art, it was installation, there was theatre, there was film, there was documentaries.
Yeah.
I think there was even a few kind of broader social things as well. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay. Yeah. And then, you know, comics and art installation stuff. So there's almost, I was looking through and there's actually some interesting projects going through.
Yeah, each project has a deadline. So they'll say this is the goal, and you can keep track of how many days are left on the project goal and how much is pledged so far.
Mm-hmm.
If the project doesn't get all the money it needs, then the project won't go ahead and no money will be asked of you. So there's a $1 is the minimum pledge, and depending on who starts the project, you can go up anywhere to, you know, $10, $50, hundreds of dollars. Depending on how much you pledge, you get different levels of rewards in return, whether it be signed things or extra artwork or whatever. Mm-hmm. The latest one I was looking at was one from Jeremy Bastion, Cursed Pirate Girl, which I believe you looked at as well. So that's been published by Olympian Publishing, and now I think he's just collecting the three issues that he's done.
That's a beautiful looking book.
Yeah, it's very intricate, black and white, very detailed, and it's received a lot of praise. So, yeah, there's quite a lot of comics, and it's a good way just to, because it can be quite expensive to do, obviously, self-publishing. So you can back it. Anyone can back, or anyone can start a project. If you're not a US resident, you'll need a Amazon account just to kind of for the system that you're like a US resident or something like that. But, it's definitely doable. If you like arty things and if you want to see arty things come to pass, or if you've got a dream, if you've got an idea of your own that...
you have dollar to spare, or if you want to see something come to fruition and you just need a little bit of extra cash to make it happen, it's the way to do it.
It's a pretty...
and it works. I saw ones with like $4,000 or $5,000 and they were like maybe like 80% of the way there, and that was on the front page.
I have seen very few that haven't reached their goal.
Or at least sold away, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, you can look on their blog. I'm actually just looking at their blog now, and there's like all the projects. Like, there's a life-size mousetrap, which is 16-piece, 50,000-pound interactive kinetic sculpture. there's all manner of things that you wouldn't really find anywhere else. And there are similar blogs to this, crowdfunding kind of stuff, but sure. Kickstarter's the best one.
It seems effective.
And so it's kickstarter.com.
And that sort of draws the show to a close, I would say.
I would say so. It's been on this grand final weekend.
God, I don't care. Eh? Are there any AFL? That's Australian Football League, by the way. Are there any yes. AFL comics that you can think of?
No.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's some English rugby comics.
There's English soccer comics as well, wasn't there? Yeah. There's Japanese, a lot of Japanese.
Oh yes, you know, they do sports comics. They do baseball, basketball. Yep, for sure. Mm. But, yeah, if anyone knows of any AFL comics, let me know so I cannot read those.
Yeah, well, thanks for listening for this 8th episode of Exeter Sequential.
Hope you all enjoyed your long weekend, and now you're happy to get back to the grind of work, because I think this comes out on Monday. So
Yeah. If you want to look at our website, it's extrasequential.com. My blog is comicbookjesus.com.
Yep. My music for the show, my music is at purgeaudit.com, and my blog is The Drowning Machine, which you can find at Blogspot. And if you want to email us about the show,
yes, you can email Chris with a K at extrasequential.com. And you can also find all the podcasts on iTunes.
And just Mixcloud.
And Mixcloud.com.
Which is new.
New avenue for us. So thank you for listening. We have no idea what we're talking about next week.
Many thanks. I think I have some suspicions what we could talk about, but I'll keep it to myself.
Suspicious minds.
That's a topic.
What?
Suspicion.
Singing comics?
Oh, well, that too, but suspicion in comics. No, that's too vague. Singing comics is interesting.
Singing comics? Is that like the singing birthday cards?
No, comics with singing in them. So besides the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I've got to think of a few more.
Oh, okay. Well, Scott Pilgrim does. Scott Pilgrim.
Ah, it does. Okay, no, we'll keep this topic in mind. That's good.
Yeah, cool.
Cool. We'll see you all, or you'll hear us all next week.
You better believe it.
See ya. Bye.